All right, good deal. Hey, if you got a Bible, turn to Exodus 20. Hey, it's good to see you guys here today. Golly, I'm looking forward to this series. This is a series. This God's at War is a series. It's not for the faint of heart. It takes some real courage to take a look at some of these things because these are things that we battle. And so, I don't know. We decided many weeks ago, is taking a look and wanting to do a series. To where everybody's going to be on the same page, right? We'll do a series that everybody in our connection groups or small groups, we're going to start a lot of small groups because this is such a powerful subject. When you take a look at some of the things that we'll look at, some of them, you know, it's not going to be for the faint of heart. You have to take a look at some things. We're going to do some things, and you'll see. It'll make sense to you today. It'll make sense to you where we're going. But we put these connection group, these new connection groups, other things, and we settle on this series. Number one, because you'll see the subject. Why? Because it so fits. It's so relevant, practical for today. But we wanted to have some material that could be done in connection groups that would be the same thing that I'm doing here so that we parallel for these 6-7 weeks. And so a pastor up in Louisville by the name of Kyle Eidelman wrote a book called God's at War. And it has great material to it. In fact, I've met him several times. He is a true blue. He wrote a book on this. And so if you want to pick up the book, obviously it's fantastic. But obviously we're going to be covering the materials in the connection groups, and I'm going to be doing messages alongside it. But here's the whole thought. Here's the picture in our culture when we look at what this thought of the gods at war really mean. Okay? We're going to explain it to you today. You're going to know why we're doing what we're doing today. Gods at war. Gods at war? What does that mean? Well, basically you need to know that there's a battle going on every day. And you may not even see it. You may not know anything about it. And chances are, if you don't see it or know anything about it, then you are being defeated and don't even know it. Because there's no, it's bad enough being in a battlefield, but it's really bad if you're in a battlefield and don't know it. And so that, as you take a look at this today, I want you to think about this today, because this will be one of those messages that kind of follows you out the door and makes you think and makes you put some time into, okay, how is that to me? What does that to me? You'll see it in just a minute. All right, so let's go ahead and jump right in and take a look at some of the things, because today's going to be an intro, because I want you to know where we're going when we hit all of these. I want you to see the foundation of why we're doing what we're doing, and what the things that God has promised us. Okay, so let's go ahead and jump right in. Okay, and if you want to take down the little thoughts here today, are going to be real easy. Basically, we're just going to follow the title. Okay, God's at war. God's at war. So number one is who are the gods? All right, the gods, plural. All right, who are they? Let's take a look in Exodus chapter 20, Exodus chapter 20, verse 2. Now, in case you're not familiar with Exodus, Exodus 20 is where the Ten Commandments are listed. All right, just the Ten Commandments. These are the first two. Let's take a look at them. It says this. It says, "For I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery." Obviously talking to the Israelites. And here's the first one. You shall have no other gods. There it is. Gods. You shall have no other gods before me. Right? Or instead of me, or in preference to me. We'll talk about it in just a minute, what that little gods means. What is being talked about here? Okay, take a look at the next piece of it. It says this, "You shall not make for yourself any carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth." Now, verse 5, if you like writing in your Bible, "You shall not bow down." Okay? Underline the little phrase, "bow down." Okay? We'll come back to it in just a minute. "To them or serve them." Underline the little "serve." Bow down, serve, bow down, serve. Okay, so what we're talking about today, okay, is idolatry. Okay, idols. Idols. And you're going, come on, Pastor, you know, we don't have idolatry today. There are no hunks of stone, you know, that we go, you know, and bow down to. Okay, but I want you to see this thought. I want you to be able to translate this into our culture. I want you to see what the Lord is talking about here, and then the things that go on around us, you're going to see some incredible things. So what is an idol? Okay, what is an idol? You know, we talk about American Idol, right? It's a popular thing that's gone along. What is it talking about when you use the word idol? It's something that receives adoration, something that, you know, people serve, people that look up to, people that it captures a piece of who they are, their hearts, and different things like that. An idol is something that is really, when it comes down to it, it's something that is worshipped, something that is adored, something that in your life means a great deal to you. Okay? So this whole picture, this whole thought of an idol, okay, it's just taking a look at those things that are in our lives that mean the most to us. Those things that in our lives that we are willing to serve and to sacrifice for. You'll see how all this comes together in just a minute. But an idol can be defined as anything that you love, serve, or sacrifice to more than God. Okay? If you are a believer here today, pretty much anything in your life, anything can be a God, little g. Okay? Anything can be a God. It's not just the things behind me, but it's a myriad of lists that we're not going to have time to talk about. But once you get the hang of what it looks like, I think it's going to expose some of those things in your life. But I kind of want to go back a little bit and let you see some things, and then let's bring it to parallel for today. When you go all the way back, I mean, our race, our human race has been worshiping idols from the very beginning, it seems like. And then when you come all the way up till now, people say, well, you know, this is classic. I'm starting to hear this often from different people. Well, you know, we live in the enlightened age. And I'm thinking, tell me how we've been enlightened. Help me out. Well, we don't bow down to hunks of stone anymore. I understand that. But hang with me here. See if you don't see some similarities. See if you don't see the parallels, even though it may have gotten a little more distinguished, a little more educated, a little more informed. But is it not still the same thing? As we go back to the times of the Old Testament, there were two gods, really, one god and one goddess, that were mentioned the most throughout the Bible. Now, the first god's name was Baal, all right? B-A-A-L. It's actually Baal. But, you know, in the South, we just, Baal, it's Baal. And so, however you want to say it, whatever you want to look at it as, okay, Baal. Now, Baal was the chief god of the Canaanites. And really, he survived all the way up to really around the Persians. Baal. Baal was the chief god, but his main area of expertise was prosperity and success. But he was more of the chief god. Okay, so when you went to him, that's what prosperity and success. Now the second one was a goddess, and her name was Asherah. And basically, she was the goddess of sex and fertility. And so they became two of the number. They had other gods, but they became the two that really captured, if you will, the imagination. So you have prosperity and success and sex were the two main gods that were worshipped. Okay, question for you today. We don't have names for the gods anymore, but I ask you the question. Do we not still worship them in our culture today, even though we don't have a name for them? I want you to think about it a minute. These gods that demand us and who we are and that we serve them. You know, it's an interesting thing when you look at all of these different gods. Those are just two. I'll run down some of the others in just a minute. Because those two could not be your gods of choice, right? Right? It's the whole thought of what is it that's in your life that you want most of all? I mean, if the genie could come out of the bottle and give you three wishes, what would it look like? I mean, that's what you think about it. If we're just being honest. Now, the great part about what we're talking about today is that there's not anybody else in the room that can talk to you about this or that can tell you about this and look at you and say, well, you know, you should be. No. It's between you and God here. This is not anything that's about anybody else but you. But having the courage to take a look at these things and the demands that they give, we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. I just want you to see the different thoughts of it. So again, that was them. Now the Greeks really, really honed this in. Okay? Now you had the Persians, yeah, and you had the Babylonians. They had their systems. But the Greeks brought the gods to a whole new level. If you know anything about Greek mythology that eventually morphed into the Romans, I mean, this is where they had all the stories that went with them, right? And this is where they had more gods than you can imagine. That's what you think about. The Greeks had a god for wisdom, god for pleasure, health. Right, Asclepius, I believe, was the god of health. I mean, do you know folks today? I mean, there's nothing wrong per se, but there's nothing wrong with. I mean, in fact, the scriptures teach about how important our health is and taking care of our body. But do you know people where their own health is their god? They serve it every day. It's all they think about. Interesting. Yeah, but Jeff, that's a positive thing. Not if it becomes a god. Does that make sense? So it doesn't have to be just all these negative, bad things. No. Most of these are positive. There's not one of these things up here that are positive, that can't be positive. But it's an amazing thing when you look at it. Health, power, there was always usually a god or god of war. Agriculture, music, right? Music. I mean, let me tell you something. Music is an incredible tool. And it can mean a great deal in somebody's life. But I'm here to tell you, like when we look for people who are musicians, I only have one stipulation because I know nothing. I know absolutely nothing about it other than when it sounds good or it sounds bad. But do you know what the one stipulation here we have for musicians is that we want them to love God more than they love music. Because whenever you flip it the other way around, it becomes a god. Does that make sense? So as you take a look, and I can go on, the list goes on, the god, you know, Nike, the god of victory. And so you go on and on and on and on and on, and there's a whole list of them. But the question is the same as today. But I want you to know that all of these things I've just mentioned, we know this in that. We do this math in our head, but none of these have what it takes to come through for you. I mean, we know that to be the truth. How many do we know who have all these things and all the things we just listed, and they actually get it to a point of success or have a lot of it, and they don't have it, it has them, and they wind up being miserable, empty people. And we step back and we look at them and say, how can you not be happy? Look at all that you have. I'm here to tell you, we know the picture. We know where these things end up down the road if they become the center point of who we are, if they become the god little g. We can do it in our brain, and yet we keep going to the same dry well over and over again, expecting it to really quench our thirst, and it never does. And we're shocked when it doesn't. And usually we'll throw it away and go try something else, especially in our culture. Just kind of who we are. It's kind of what we do, you know? We give it a try, and it doesn't work. We wad it up, we throw it away, go try something else. And then when you've done that long enough, you begin to get very cynical about life in general, to be honest. It's interesting. So when you take a look at all of these, okay, when you think about prosperity, when you think about wisdom, when you think about pleasure, sex, whatever you want to talk about, I'm here to tell you, I'm not down on any of those things. Those are all gifts. Those are all gifts that God gives. I don't know about you, but I enjoy being happy every once in a while. Just a thought. There are certain things I really enjoy. Hey, I mean, I really enjoy, I mean, you know, the right time of the season has come. And I watched that Montana game yesterday, and you're going, who, what? I had a great time. Listen, there are certain things that God gives. None of these are negative, okay? None of these things are bad per se. They're gifts that God gives. Prosperity, something to be enjoyed. Sex, obviously, was something that God gave to be enjoyed. We can go on. The list goes down and down. So I am not anti these things. But I'm here to tell you, these things make great gifts from God, but they make terrible gods themselves. They will not only disappoint, but they'll wind up being oppressive to you in the long run. And we know it to be the truth. If you're saying, oh, Jeff, I'm not so sure. Man, if I really had all the money I ever needed, then dozens, thousands, millions have tried it. But I'm telling you what, they find it pretty empty. If you want to go run down that road, knock yourself out. But you'll find out how empty it is when you get there. Oh, I don't believe it. Well, if you don't believe it, then you're probably not going to get anything out of it today. So you just kind of go on your little phone and do whatever you want to do. Because I'm here to tell you, if you've been down the road long enough, you know what I'm talking about. Okay? Or if you have enough wisdom to see down that road. So number one's gods, okay? Those are the gods, the things that compete for your affections, the things that are out there, and they come in all shapes and sizes, okay? They come in all shapes and sizes, and they demand to be served, okay? They demand to be sacrificed for the longer it gets. It doesn't start out that way, okay? But it grows. All right, number two, the battleground. Let me tell you what the battleground is. The battleground is your heart, okay? That is where the battle takes place, the heart. Now, when I talk about the metaphor, the heart, I'm not talking about the thump-thump thing that's in here, right? But it becomes a symbol that the Hebrews use that has become a symbol in our culture. It becomes the foundation. It becomes a foundation of who you are. It's at the core of who you are. It's where your mind, will, emotions, affections. It becomes who you are. Now, therefore, we use it in all kinds of language. When you look at someone and say, well, you know, well, his heart just wasn't in it, or her heart just wasn't in it. What does that mean? That means that the person down deep, that's not what they really wanted. That's why they lost interest. That's why whatever. Their heart wasn't really in it. Therefore, we understand the concept because we use it in so many things. Well, yeah, boy, she just gave her whole heart to that whatever. So it becomes this thought of who we are really. And so there's a battle, okay? There's a battle for those things. There's a battle for your heart. The Bible has a lot to say about it. In fact, the Bible uses this, if you will, thought quite a few times. But what is it that affects the heart? Here we go. How do you have a change of heart? Just want you to think about it. See, we use these phrases all the time. What does that look like? When you hear somebody make the statement, they gave their heart to Christ, what does that mean? And how do you do that? So, change of heart. How does a person change their heart? I'm here to tell you this. It's not because they just decide to. Well, I think I'll change my heart today. It's not going to happen. You may try, but more than likely, unless you really, really, really know what you're doing, it'll just, because you'll eventually do something for a few days and then you'll kind of fall back to the same old thing. Change of heart. In fact, let me just tell you this. One of my great thrills in being who I am and doing what I do is what I call the Christian experience. And the great mystery down through the ages has been what the Christian experience of hearts being changed. I've seen it all my life. I saw it happen. I've seen it happen in me. This coming to put your faith and trust in who Christ is and following Him, and then watching things change. And what does it mean? That if anyone's in Christ, he's a new creation. Old things pass away, all kinds of things come new. What does it mean to have something different in here? It's an incredible thing to think about. And it's been the one thing that has been the great testimony for believers down through the centuries. The changed heart, right? Let's take a look at a little bit what the scripture says about it. All right, Proverbs chapter 4, don't turn to these, just look at the screen. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23. It says to keep your heart, right? Keep your heart with all vigilance. For from it flows the springs of life. What? Take a look at it again. Keep, another word for keep is guard. Put a guard at your heart. Well, how do you do that? We're going to talk about it today. Today, not next week, today. So keep your heart, guard your heart with all vigilance. What does vigilance mean? Vigilance means don't go to sleep. Vigilance means to stay focused, be vigilant. Therefore, guard it with focus. Why? Because what flows from it is your life. Therefore, what's contained in your heart will determine everything about you. Your directions, your decisions, who you become as a personality, what type of person you are. Therefore, you guard your heart. Question, how is it? How is it that you change your heart? What is it that affects who you are? We're going to talk about that at the very end, obviously. But I just want you to know, when we use that word heart, I just needed you to know, because we're going to talk about it a whole lot through the weeks to come. When we use that word heart, I just want you to know what it means. We usually use it almost exclusively in our culture with some sort of a romantic type love. But it is so far beyond that. It does include that. But when you talk about in your heart, what is it? It's incredible. When you take a look at athletics and you put the two together and you got, let me just use guy as an example. You got one guy, you got both these guys, they've got pretty good talent. But the thing that's going to distinguish one from the other is the heart that lives in him. Does he have the heart to compete? Does he have the heart to not quit? Does he have the heart to keep going when things get discouraged? See, so this heart thing, we know what this means, but we've never stopped long enough to think what affects it. And that there's a battle going on for that thing, heart, that lives in you every day, competing for your heart. This is an amazing thing to think about. A couple other things for you to see. Proverbs chapter 27 and verse 19 says, as in water, face reflects flesh. As in water, face reflects face, so the heart of man reflects the man. So according to this passage, your heart is who you are. Okay, think about this, guys. This is so good. Please listen. Right? When you think about our culture, not everybody else's culture around the world, just ours. Since the heart is who you really are, why don't people change it more? Because it's hard. And I'm here to tell you is that our culture doesn't really want to change their heart. They just want to hire a public relations specialist. In other words, I don't care what's in my heart. All I care is how it looks to everybody else. That is called hypocrisy. Guys, I want you to tell you, one of my passions as your pastor, I want you to experience a real relationship with the God who created you. Because once you've ever experienced real, not the fake stuff, not the hypocritical stuff, not the stuff, oh, you know, where you got the lingo down and you're saying the lingo, but where you really have a relationship with the God who created you because that's the reason you were created. It's an amazing thing when that happens. But there's so much faking it. There's so much, here's how I want to appear, so I'm not going to do the work that it takes to get my heart there. I'm just going to put this front up that makes it look my heart, like my heart is there. Right? It's an incredible thing. But the heart is who you are. It's who you are. And the great part about it, I don't know if it's good or bad, but I think it is that there's only two people that know your heart. You and the Lord. Right? Nobody else in this room can judge your heart. Now, that happens quite a bit. People look and say, well, the reason you did that, well, you know, they don't know. You're the only one that knows. Most people won't even be honest with themselves when they take a look. But I want you to know that God knows. Ah, it's an amazing thing. All right, let me tell you, I've been gone some lately, and I've been on more planes than you can imagine in the last couple of weeks, and especially, you know, some of you heard, I got a flight canceled, and then I was trying to get home from Billings, and they sent me to L.A., which makes sense, right? You need to go to Los Angeles before you come to Tampa. And so, anyway, so I was on a lot of planes this past week, and typically, I told you about this before, but this happens all the time. I'm sitting in this chair, okay, next to this guy, and with as big as I am, right, I'm sitting right next to him. And so we have this conversation. We're having this great conversation, man. He's just going on about all kinds of things. And he's going on about all kinds of just talk. And then finally, you know what happened? I've told you this before. He asked, so what do you do? And as soon as he asked that, I said, well, this conversation's about to be done. and so I look back over. I said, well, I'm a pastor. And I watched his eye. He could not help his response. It looked like he swallowed a bowling ball. And I could look into his eyes, and immediately his mind was clicking about what he just said over the past 10 minutes. Right? You know what happened, you know. And he's like, oh, no, you know. And I'm used to it. It's incredible. It just happens. But I wanted to ask him. I didn't because I didn't want him, you know. It just wasn't the time. But what does it matter? Right? Well, if I'd known you're a pastor, then I would have cleaned up my language a little. I said, why? Right. Why? I mean, why? Why? I'm not God, right? But I think it's interesting that we try to mask it in front of everybody else, but God knows what's in your heart. I don't mean nothing. I know that's not good English, but I think you understand. Right? I don't mean anything. I mean, really. I've always been curious with that. I tend to change the situation when I walk in the room. It's hysterical to me. Why? Well, I'm nothing. God knows your heart anyway. So who do we think we're fooling? See, it's not the outside. God doesn't care. In fact, there's a great verse in Samuel that says, man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks at the... God sees, he looks past all that stuff. And he sees who you are. Therefore, if you're serving him, you're not worried about the outside stuff. Why? Because he didn't see any of that. What you're working on is the heart. Therefore, the gods that we serve here all have to do with the outside stuff. I think it's interesting that what God is most, what he is most concerned with is not what you do, but who you are. Because you can do the right things for the wrong reasons. See, God doesn't care about the right things. He cares about the right reasons. Now, Pastor, how do you know that? Well, Jesus said it. In fact, Jesus really blew these people away. Take a look. In you just look up here. Matthew chapter 5, verse 27. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. Okay? Jesus is quoting one of the commandments. But look what Jesus said. But I said, every one of you, everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery in his heart. So what is Jesus? Jesus is blowing this whole thing away. You know, these Pharisees were strutting around, you know, being cocky and proud because they got in the outside looking pretty good. But see, Jesus could look through all the facade and see the hypocrisy in here. And he's trying to tell them, although they don't think they get it, he's trying to tell them that the battle is in the heart. Listen to me. Look at me. The battle is not just to simply to abstain. By the way, we're all terrible at that. Oh, if I can just not do that, if I can just not do that. And the more you tell yourself that, the more likely you are you're going to. Okay, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to think that. I'm not going to think that. I'm not going to think. You're done. You're toast already. All right? But Jesus takes it to the level of who you are in here. What is it that you're creating this thing in here to be? That's who you are, and eventually that's what you're going to do. So Jesus takes this whole sin thing and takes it away from the action. That's just an outward expression of what's in here. Right? Oh, it's a powerful thing. This is going to be a powerful series if you're courageous enough to look. Because I believe with all of my heart that the world around us is screaming out for somebody to be real. That is, I want you, just somebody, be who they say they are. Not try to act like they say they are, but to actually be who they say they are. And this is authenticity that we're talking about. Why? Because God can see through everything that's fake and sees right here. Interesting, isn't it? Matthew chapter 12 in verse 33 through 35. In fact, just skip down to verse 34 because we're running out of time. It says, for out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good indication of what's in your heart is determined by what comes out of your mouth. Now, again, like the plane story I just told you. Before you know anybody's listening. Right? That is just what comes out. Therefore, the scripture teaches us here that the mouth is connected to the heart. It's not good physical anatomy, but it's good spiritual anatomy. Therefore, people are generally going to talk about what's most important to them, what's on their mind, what they're passionate about. Those things come out of your mouth. Okay? And it just is. So Jesus makes that other thought there too. So the battleground, okay? The battleground. It truly is where the battle is won or lost. Number three, this is where we're going to close. I'm not going to tell you we're not going to finish. All right? Because I didn't finish last night. All right? So definitely not going to finish today. But I think you see in me the excitement because this is a passion I have. I want people to know. I want people to know that this whole thing that we talk about here is not just some religious thing where we come and we go through the motions and we forget about it the rest of the week. This is something that you become, not something that you do. I didn't forget what I was going to say next. I just want you to think about it. All right? This is something, not something that you do, but something that you are. And if it's something that you are, it will eventually be something that you do. Makes sense. Number three, the tactics. So, Jeff, how does this thing work? How does a person change their heart? What do they do? Again, we're not going to be able to cover it all today, but I'm going to give you enough that's going to help you, that's going to help you understand and help you to see it. But the tactics begin. Take a look, if you will, in Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. So then the battle's in your heart. Guard your heart with all vigilance, as already says. But what does this look like? Look at Matthew chapter 6. And take a look down in verse 16. We're going to skip to verse 16. And I've got to give you this a little bit. If you don't, fasting, if you're not up familiar with it, fasting is a concept of doing without food in order to focus on your relationship with Him. And so it becomes something that in the scriptures that they used to do and that was still practiced today in different circles. But the thought here is, why are you doing what you're doing? So Jesus exposes hypocrisy here. Because when you're doing out food, I mean, you had these people, the Pharisees, they would do this fast, and then they wouldn't wash their face, and they would, you know, I'm fasting, so that everybody could see, so that everybody think how wonderful they are. That's what Jesus is talking about here. I just wanted you to know. Let's read it. Verse 16. And when you fast, do not look gloomy like the hypocrites. So now you see what he's saying. For they disfigure their faces that their fasting may be seen by others. Truly, I say, they have their reward. But when you fast, anoint your head with oil, wash your face, then your fasting may not be seen by others, but your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Look at verse 19. Do not lay up for yourself treasures on earth. What do you mean treasures on earth? What do you mean? This is, in other words, don't put all your eggs in the basket of things that aren't going to last. All right? What it says there? Where moth and rust destroy. What does that mean? Well, it's the simple truth that everything that you have, everything that you are, is decaying. Aren't you glad you came today? Everything in your life is decaying. That is, it's not going to last. And you know it's not going to last. Yeah, but Jeff, I want to squeeze every bit. Okay, great. Knock yourself out. But remember this. It is going downhill. And all of the gods and all the ones we've mentioned cannot offer you anything that will not degrade and rust. It may start off cool, but the law of diminishing returns usually takes it down to where, it's not near as cool as I thought it was. So he says here, where's your treasure? What is a treasure? A treasure is something that is most important to you. Okay? So he says, don't lay up treasures in heaven, all right? But it says, but lay up for yourself treasures in heaven where the moth and rust and won't destroy, right? And where thieves can't break in and steal it. Now, the key verse here is 21. Look at this. For where your treasure is, that's where your heart's going to be. All right? You want me to tell you how to change your heart? Then you have to change your treasures. And that is easier said than done. What is a treasure? Well, let me tell you what a treasure is not. Okay, a treasure is not something that Captain Bligh buried on the island of wherever. Okay, I mean, yeah, that could be treasure, but a treasure is something that is important to you. And what determines importance? Well, a lot of things. A lot of choices you make. In fact, I'm here to tell you, your time and where you spend your time is probably the greatest indicator. Because your heart tends to go where you spend most of your time and your affections. What you spend your time thinking on. In Proverbs it says, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. It's a pretty powerful verse, isn't it? As someone thinks in their heart, so are they. That is, that's who their heart's going to become just by sheer, what do you spend your time thinking? What do you spend your time on? Since your time is your life, therefore, what you spend your time on will be what is most important to you. That just makes sense. So how you choose your time doesn't mean it's immediate, because the heart is changed slowly by choices and time, because you'll be amazed that spending time with something, and then as that time consistently grows, affections grow for that. But where your treasure is, I want you to know that that's where your heart's going to be. Again, I'd like to take a look at a couple of Jesus' parables. Two parables and three verses. And just look up here. Chapter 13 of Matthew, verse 44. The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field. Okay? The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field. And when a man finds it, he covers it up. And then what does he do? He goes out and he sells all that he has and buys that field. Therefore, what are you willing to do to obtain your treasure? Right? Usually, it demands everything you are. Right? It demands everything you are. If you really care about it. Interesting. Look at the next one. Look at the next parable. It's just like it. Again, the kingdom of heaven was like a merchant in search of fine pearls. Okay? Continue to read. And who, on finding one pearl of great value, he goes out and sells all that he has and he buys it. Question. Why would any person sell all they have to have the best pearl? Well, I don't know about you, but pearls are not my thing. Okay, I wouldn't give you $10 for this because I don't care. Give me a fake one. They look almost the same. Oh, but it's not the same, Jeff. You don't understand. I know, because that's not where my heart is. The question is, where is yours? And it's determined by what are you willing to sacrifice for it and what are you willing to serve? Kind of dawning on you a little bit. Sacrifice and serve? Kind of dawning on you what we talked about with gods. Is that not what they demand? Sacrifice and service. Do you remember what we talked about last week when we were talking about what God's been doing around here? By the way, there's some DVDs as you leave from last week's service. If you weren't here, please pick one up. We had such great response from last week's service. If you weren't able to be here, we want you to pick one up and see it. Because basically what we did, we just talked about what God was doing around here and how he's using people through their sacrifice and through their service to make incredible impact. And it is an amazing thing when you think about it. But what you serve and what you sacrifice for is where your heart's going to be. That is a great indicator. And like the little skit told you before, you can say that the Lord is your God, but if he has no service, sacrifice, affections, then you're just fooling yourself, right? It has to do with where your heart is. I don't know. When I think about that, those things that are important to you, serve and sacrifice, thoughts, desires, time, talents, finances can all be told through that. We're going to talk about in the weeks to come of changing a heart. But what happens when a heart is changed is when they start pouring their time, their talents, and their resources into something different. When somebody has a change of heart, it means that they finally found the courage to break away from what wasn't really coming through for them and try to find someone else, something else. Guys, the reason I can tell you this, I didn't become a believer until I was 21. And there was a time in my life, as silly as it sounds, some of you might relate, there was a time in my life where sports was a God little G for me. Right? I played football. That was something that I didn't care anything else about. But playing that sport. Listen to me. I gave all of my time to it. Everything that I was, my heart was totally given into this game. Thoughts, spare time, watching film, everything revolved around this God little G. Now, for me, it was sports at that time. For you, it could be a myriad of other things. But the question is, what is it that is in your life that you are the most fearful of losing? And you will find where your heart is. Well, for me, if you know my story, I'm going to go through it quickly. had three surgeries. At the end of the third surgery, it was a bad situation, and so I couldn't play anymore. And you talking about that God little G disappointing me and downright being oppressive. Because when that was gone out of my life, I felt like, who cared? And I developed this very, very bad, destructive type attitude that started taking me downhill. Why? Because these gods here were never meant to come through for you. The God that I had. And while I do love sports today, I mean, I do. I love watching it on television. I love, because I can't do it anymore, right? Really. I'd like to think I could. I think my mind still could, but the rest of me can't do it. But I have to guard my heart, right? It says to look, keep your heart, guard your heart with all vigilance. Make sure that things in your life don't ascend into things of more importance than they should. Interesting, isn't it? Eventually, somebody invited me to church, and I became a believer, and I started following him, and that's where my heart went, because I developed a hunger to know who he was and to experience what it meant to be his follower, and that's my desire today. Is to understand and to learn and to have a relationship with the God who created me. It's an amazing thing when you think about it. As I close today, okay? Again, there's not enough time. There's not enough time to really share everything, but I think you know what I'm talking about. All of us know this picture. The last verse is, for what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? In other words, look at me. I know what some of you think. A whole lot of you in here think, man, if I just had enough of this, there wouldn't be any problems. I can give you a list of 20 people that'll tell you the exact opposite. Therefore, what you're chasing after will never come through for you, even if you never get it. You see, it is a powerful thing when you understand the heart. And the gods that are all around you, they're competing for its mastery. Right? Amazing. That's what we're going to be talking about in the next few weeks. As I close. If there's never been a time in your life, say, Jeff, I've never truly understood what all this means. You see, this is more than just praying a prayer and saying, oh, God, come into my heart. And then you walk out of here and nothing ever changes. I'm here to tell you, that is not the answer. The question is, when you put your faith and trust, when you give your heart to Christ in that thought, you're basically saying, Lord, I'm going to follow you. I'm going to serve you. I'm going to sacrifice for you. That's what that means. And yet we've cheapened it today to where it's just some sort of phlegm, superstitious prayer that makes a difference. Interesting, huh? Not different than what we've heard at times. So if there's never been a time in your life you put your faith and trust, you've given your heart to him, say, Lord, I want to follow you. There'll be some pastors up here that love to talk to you about what that means. Right? Also, if you're a believer here today, I'm here to tell you, you look at all of the great believers in the Bible, and every one of them, almost every one of them failed in different ways. So we're going to struggle in our life. This may have dawned on you today as, wow, I've let some things get into my life that are more important than they should be. Everybody does it. Everybody has it. We're going to be talking more about it. I'm going to be sharing some of my own. So don't beat yourself up. Just thank God that he's revealed it to you and do something about it. All right. Good deal. Let's all stand. Tim, come out and close us. Hey, it's good to see you today. And hey, if you're a guest with us today, all right, there's a guest reception in the back. All right. I'd love to talk with you. Also remember, okay, if you'd like to be a part of small groups, you just happen to be the lucky one, because the small groups for you guys happen next. There's a connection center out there you can be a part of. But anyway, pick up the DVD if you'd like to. But God bless you guys, and you have a great day. I look forward to this series.